Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the RIP Tour podcast. We are kicking off our 2024 season with another step back in time on our history series. It feels like a long time. We kind of digged into our history backlog. If it's not over a year, it's definitely close to the last history episode we did, but we can't discuss this year. On my own, first up, it's probably the only time ever he can say where he is in England is actually warmer than where we are right now in Central Florida. So, Gary, what's going on, bud?
Hello, I am basking in this warm weather and enjoying watching you guys be absolutely freezing. It brings a little bit of joy to my very boring life. Very excited to be back recording. We've been trying to get lined up for ages. We're trying to make some new episodes. We've got a brand new software, which I'm very excited about. So finally on YouTube doing a live, not live, but like a video version of the podcast, which I'm very excited about.
Yes, definitely want to broaden the horizons with the YouTube. We've been saying it for a long time, and I think this new software will set us up nicely. Second up, Liz, how are you?
I am cold for once, which is wild. Got to break out the hoodie and everything.
Yeah, definitely a hoodie day. I would say as well, today, I just mentioned it pre-recording. It is beautiful still today. I mean, the sun's shining. It's nice and crisp. Definitely hoodie and shorts weather for me, for sure. So, and then finally, second episode now, I believe. You're going to find this person probably a constant fixture now for future episodes. Just the way the episodes are gone, we haven't really formally introduced him. I think we'll do that on the next episode, but you all know he is. Jason, what's going on, bud?
Not much. A little cold like everybody else. I think I'm officially a true Floridian now. I'm freezing. And if I was still back in California, this would be normal weather, but I am now officially cold.
Yes. So everyone's cold apart from Gary. Gary's about, what, 2-3 degrees warmer. so he's really basking in it today, but cool, yeah. And then Tim has to work today, unfortunately, but we did send him back in time to do his part of this episode. So today's episode is all about Halloween Horror Nights 8, titled Primal Scream. And Gary, you were on the last episode, Halloween Horror Nights 7. It feels forever and a day since we did the last one, right?
Yeah. Can you actually remember when we recorded it or not?
No, I mean, at the start, I said if it's not over a year, it's definitely close. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. We've lacked a little bit, but we're trying to put that right now.
And that's it. And I think it's important as well. We want to do this right. You know, we want to index everything. We want to get everything in chronology. This is not just an episode we set up and say, okay, let's just do a history episode. A lot of work does go on behind the scenes, whether it's researching and doing all that stuff. But so, just like normal, we do have our time-traveling phone booth. Tim was kind enough to get in it. He's going all the way back to 1998. So, shall we listen what Tim got up to?
Let's go.
Yes, let's go.
Let's do it.
Halloween Horror Nights 8, titled as Primal Scream, was the 8th annual Halloween Horror Nights event located at Universal Studios, Florida. The event was advertised with a screaming face with the catchphrase, "The last scream you'll ever hear." The event featured 5 haunted houses, 1 scare zone, 2 shows, and a parade. The event lasted almost all of October and ran for 19 nights. The event ran for 19 nights on October 2nd through 3rd, 8th through 10th, 15th through the 18th, 21st to the 25th, and the 27th through the 31st. Non-peak nights ran from 7 p.m. to 12 a.m., and Friday and Saturdays were 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. Single night admission to the event was $42 plus tax, and the stay and scream price continued to daytime guests with valid daytime admission for an extra $17. For the first time in history, 5 houses would feature at the event with a pair of interconnected houses. The first of the double house was SS Fritanic, Fear in First Class, located in the Earthquake Queue. This focused on the more affluent areas of the ship, and the guide map stated, "Choose your path through an eerie ocean liner that pulled into port years ago with all aboard mysteriously missing. In Fear in First Class, you'll explore the darkened staterooms and ballrooms haunted by the ghosts of former passengers." The second interconnected house was SS Fritanic Carnage Crew, which was to the right when you entered the reception facade. The house description was, "Choose your path through an eerie ocean liner that pulled into port years ago with all aboard mysteriously missing. In Carnage Crew, you'll venture into the vessel's murky depths and meet a skeleton crew who will cater to your every whimper." The third haunted house was Hell's High, located in Nazarmans, and the description said, "Go on location to a dilapidated high school where a scary new slasher film is being shot. Unfortunately, when the director yelled cut, the film's villain took him literally. Now he's loose in the school, attacking all the other actors and the film crew and you." Next up was Universal's Museum of Horror, Chamber of Horrors. This was one of two Universal's Museum of Horrors houses that were located in Soundstage 22. This specific haunted house was titled Chamber of Horrors. The description for the house was, "Enter a museum where every exhibit is a work of art. The art of scaring the daylights out of you. You'll meet Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, and all your favorite classic Universal monsters in the Chamber of Horrors." The second haunted house located here was the second Universal's Museum of Horror, but this rendition was titled Unnatural History. The event guide labeled it as, "Enter a museum where every exhibit is a work of art. The art of scaring the daylights out of you. In the Unnatural History exhibit, you'll see all the present-day horror icons come to life. That is, if you can bear to look." Once again, Midway of the Bizarre returned to Amity as the sole scare zone of the event. Very similar to previous years, it helped epitomize the party atmosphere and had now become a staple for the event. The first of the four shows was Inferno, located on the Animal Actors stage. The show was likened to Cirque du Soleil with daredevils and acrobatics, and next up was Horrorpalooza, located on Mel's Drive-In stage. Bill and Ted returned to the Wild West stage in Bill and Ted's Excellent Halloween Adventure 7, dial E for excellent, and the final show was the Festival of the Dead Parade, which took the same parade route as prior events. Rides and attractions that were open: Terminator 2, 3D Battle Across Time in Hollywood, Twister, Ride It Out in New York, Confrontation, also in New York, Earthquake, the big one, San Francisco, Jaws, Amity, Back to the Future, The Ride in World Expo, The Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera at Production Central, Beetlejuice's Graveyard Review at the Beetlejuice stage, The Gory, Gruesome, and Grotesque Horror and Makeup Show in Hollywood, and Island of Adventure Preview Center in New York.
Alrighty, thank you, Tim, for going back in time. I couldn't show up for today's episode to discuss it, but we do appreciate you going back in time there. But yeah, Halloween Horror Nights 8. We've almost got to a decade now of Halloween Horror Nights. It's here to stay. So we're just going to take basically what Tim's come back kindly told us about, and we'll discuss it a little bit more in depth there. So firstly, Halloween Horror Nights 8, Primal Scream. I love those early days where you had a little snippet or a little catchphrase that goes along with the event. I just want to see, Liz, do you like those little kind of catchphrases that go with it?
Yeah, as long as it's never go alone or whatever that one is. See, I love the original catchphrases.
Yeah, because it's like that never go alone or whatever it was, don't go alone. They kind of change it up a little bit. That's more of like a, I don't know, an added sort of saying or a tagline for it, but this was literally part of the event in terms of merchandise, poster. Jason, you like that?
Yeah, no, definitely. This is, missed the early days. This is also, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, my first time I ever went to Horror Nights in Florida.
Nice.
Was this year.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Don't remember that much, but yeah.
Well, yeah, those first years. And then Gary, these kind of events, I know we kind of, after this little bit, we'll get into those icon years when they kind of step away from that a little bit, but those early days, you like how they did the name?
Yeah, I just thought there was, I don't want to talk badly on like modern years, but I felt like the little details, there was a lot more thought put into them back then. It's a lot more commercial now, so I suppose it's hard to sort of keep that trend up. But I thought that back in the olden days, or the original days, a lot more thought went into just little whimsical catchphrases and stuff that they really put behind the show and stuff, the event and stuff like that to make it that little bit better.
Yeah, I love it. I think they should go back to these sort of little snippets. But yeah, and in terms of just the nights and pricing, it ran for 19 nights. We're almost creeping in to September here. So we've never been in September yet. October 2nd, 3rd, 8th through the 10th, 15th through the 18th, 21st through 25th, and then 27th to the 31st. So we finished on Halloween. Non-peak nights ran from 7 till 12 a.m. and Friday and Saturdays were 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. So firstly, just with the dates, all those, we know, you know, from the original, it just kind of was the Halloween weekend, and it's sort of stepping stepping up its game with the amount of dates. We're almost into September here. And just think this year, right? We're probably going to have that event on that last Friday in August. So now we're talking Mickey's Not So Scary territory with the amount of length it's starting. But Liz, just talk to you about the evolution in terms of how many nights they were there and then just what we're dealing with now. It's probably going to go from August to probably November now, the way Halloween falls on a Friday this year.
Yeah, it's wild to think. I mean, even 8 years in, they're already doing pretty much the entire month of October, which right. means the event's already getting super popular. But to now where we're pushing into August, it's crazy. And every single night is just absolutely packed now. I'm sure that the early nights in October back in 1998 are pretty calm. But now,
right.
August 30th, it'd still be packed with people.
Yeah, and just think back then as well, there was no express at this time too. So you could probably comfortably get it done on those non-peak nights, you know, early October, mid-October still. And Gary, so just kind of playing devil's advocate as well, do you prefer the fact that we're looking at well over a two-month event now? Would you like it more, I guess, shorter, for lack of a better term?
I don't think we've got a choice now with right. the way the crowds are. I don't think it's going to necessarily help the crowds, but I think it'll sort of help that sort of mid-September when everybody's in town for opening weekend. I think people, most like quite a lot of people only come for like opening weekend or the opening week, and then the sort of part ways until maybe it's the end of the event and stuff like that. So I think it might help the September crowds a little bit, even though we're only, you know, just creeping into August. But I don't really think they've got much options in terms of, you know, with the crowds at the minute. So I think it's just the way the event's going. The longer, the better to get as many people in as they can, really.
Yeah. And Jason, is there too much of a good thing, or are you happy with the evolution of the event, how it is now?
You know, it's, I think we've all kind of evolved over the years, you know, with it being almost every weekend now for everybody. And the only downside I would say versus years past is we have that burnout halfway through. Now that we all deal with, and personally I felt it, I'm sure everyone else has some point in time, versus it only being a short time of run, you didn't have that burnout, I would say, probably at the beginning of the event.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, I know. And I think just for crowds, I think Gary just said it then, they have no real choice to keep extending the dates just to try and thin out those crowds. You can't do anything about the locals because they're just going to go intermittently across the season anyway, but it's the people making, I don't know, weekend trip, opening weekend, final weekend, just, you know, here and there, that it does disperse out well. And then this is my favorite part. It's looking at the prices back then. So 1998 prices, single night admission to the event was $42 plus tax. That's without any sort of Pepsi deal where you get $10 off for residents. So you're looking at about 32, maybe with tax, $35. And then the stay and screen price, this kind of extended to daytime guests with a valid daytime admission. And this is really good. This is what I did for Halloween Horror Nights 13. Me and my granddad, we did the kind of stay and screen. Basically, yeah, if you have a, I don't know, an annual pass, I don't know if they did annual passes at the time, but or you had a daytime ticket, you could do an extra $17 just to go to the event that night. That is just mind-blowing. Just think of single day tickets now because it's so busy. They are well north of $100. Is that right, Liz? We're looking at way over $100 for a single night ticket. You went with your mom one night and did Express. How much did that cost?
A single night for my mom with Express was over $300.
Wow.
That's crazy. And I feel like every time you kind of check those Express prices, they say like, what do they say? From $80, right? Because that
right.
is... I've never seen it. Every time I look, it's always $160, something like that.
Exactly.
It's $80 for the last Tuesday hour of the event.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's crazy. I think, Gary, an extra, like if you were a daytime guest, you're there in 1998, right? There's people mm-hmm. with those badges on, ask me about Halloween Horror Nights. We've all seen them. And they said, hey, we have a hard ticketed event tonight. It's usually $42, but you've got a daytime ticket, $17 tonight. Are you going?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I think it's such a good
deal. One thing
right?
I would like to know, though, is the inflation price. So $17 in 1998, what would that be now, though? if that makes sense.
I think inflation price for theme parks are going to be different than usual.
Yeah.
Right, but that's a good point. I mean, because even if you want to do that Scream Early ticket where you can kind of go in, what is it, like at 4 p.m., I believe?
It basically gives you access an hour before the park shuts, I think, and then right. Stay in Scream, yeah.
And I think that was $20. It went to $25, and it was like $35 now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did the research. It would be $30. $30 now.
Okay.
Still a no-brainer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but even that on today's prices, you know, it's probably $100 for most nights, but, you know, $30 extra right now for a regular daytime guest. I think I'm taking that.
No brainer.
All day. Absolutely.
100%.
Absolutely. And then we also had vacation packages as well this year also. Now, this is mind-blowing as well. I just want to go over this really quickly. So we did have a one-night spooktacular, and this was $69 a person. That's obviously double occupancy. It includes your hotel for the night and then add an admission to Halloween Horror Nights. $69 gives you a hotel room and a ticket for Horror Nights, $69 a person. And they did do a two-night gory getaway. Same thing. Yeah, you have two nights in a hotel room, two tickets to Halloween Horror Nights. That was $115 a person.
That's crazy.
So,
I'm crying.
Yeah, Jason, how much did your pass cost this most recent year?
There was a comma in the end of the purchase. I'll just say that.
Okay.
I think that's the first time that's ever happened to me for a ultimate frequent field pass.
Yeah. And Liz, you stay at a resort every other day. So if you could do a two-night gory getaway, $115 a person, that is just incredible.
My question is, what hotels were there? Because remember, there were no hotels at Universal yet.
That's a great point as well. And on some of the commercials, you'll see some partner hotels that they had. I'm not sure the name of what they had. So that's a great point. Did they own any back then? Like, because Marriott always sell on site, don't they? I know they have Marriott people who sell on site for timeshares.
I think
what
they just had partnerships.
Did the hotels open? The first one? Was it Portofino the first hotel?
I want to say it was Hard Rock.
Hard Rock would have been the first one, right? And then Portofino is quite old too. So
yeah.
And Royal Pacific. Those are the three originals.
Yeah. And then what they did great was they called them like value hotels, which are still really good quality as well. So, I mean, just that price for that is just bonkers. But yeah, that is the catchphrase and then tickets and dates for you.
So yeah, we also had a commercial this year. I am going to attempt to try and get it to play now. Hopefully it plays. There we go.
$10 in advance at Ticketmaster with a Pepsi 2-liter label to Universal Studios' newest terror, Halloween Horror Nights 8 Primal Scream. Grab a Pepsi and satisfy your thirst for terror. The last scream you hear, maybe your own.
So can I just say, the late 80s, early 90s must have literally had one guy that narrated every single horror trailer. It's the same voice every time.
I love it though. The voice is great.
Yeah. But I remember when I was watching the In Search of Darkness documentaries and it was showing you all the trailers for the 80s horror, and it was just the same guy every single movie. But we had the commercial this year sponsored by Pepsi, and it showed a young woman arriving home with her groceries. She enters the house and the lights are flashing in the face from the market and appears on the wall, and she gets a fright and drops a bottle of Pepsi. It then cuts back to the woman screaming with an empty bottle of Pepsi, and the voiceover says, "Who knows what awaits terror?" Florida residents save $10 in advance at Ticketmaster. I'm guessing there wasn't many fees back then, as there is now on Ticketmaster. With a Pepsi 2-liter bottle to Universal Studios' newest terror, Halloween Horror Nights 8 Primal Scream. So, yeah. What did you think, Ash, of the commercial? I know you're into that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's just these just, I mean, I know it's obviously right for the time, but those 90s commercial, I watched those in my spare time anyway, not just Horror Nights, but just 90s compilation of commercial. Like you said, that voiceover, I feel like he's the voiceover for, you know, everything Halloween, not necessarily Horror Nights as well. So it's just that nostalgia for me also. It was good. It hit everything. It hit the Florida residents. It had the, we're going to touch on it in the kind of next part, but it had that kind of, the face that's on the event guide and posters and stuff that was included as well. And it was also, it was almost whimsical and a little bit scary as well without terrifying people. So it worked really well. I liked it.
Awesome. Liz, what did you think of this one?
I liked the very fancy special effects from 1998. Reminds me kind of like The Mummy though, when the sand in The Mummy, it was of the time and pretty cool that they did that for a commercial that was only going to air for a short period of time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. And last but not least, Jason.
I absolutely dug it. I mean, it felt very B horror vibes to it, especially for the 90s time. But what I also liked about it is it was short. It was sweet. It got to the point and, you know, it got you excited for the event. It kind of gave you that spooky vibes that you saw coming into September. You know, like Halloween is here. So I always enjoyed that. So brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah. Can I ask a quick question as well for Liz? You obviously, you're born and raised in Florida, right?
Yes.
And at this point, they were advertising nationally. They used Fox's like Halloween run to advertise as well. We're doing heavily now in Florida and Georgia. This one was probably local because it had the $10 off to Florida residents on the Pepsi bottle. So this probably aired locally. Can you remember this at all? Like growing up on TV at all?
I don't. I remember hearing of Halloween Horror Nights when I was that young, but I don't remember seeing these commercials at all. Just probably because I was just too afraid of it. So it wasn't my my thing. So I just blocked it from my memory.
Good deal.
Well, we got coming up here is, I think, near and dear to one of our members, tour guides' hearts, and that is the event guide that we got for this year with the, like Ash was mentioning, the Primal Scream font on directly on the face, which was huge for everybody. I'm going to say, Ash, on your visual of this, what do you rate this guide in years past going up to Horror Nights?
I love it. I think on the bottom, you'll be able to see it in future episodes, but my wall is full of Horror Nights posts. So this is one of them. Now, you guys know I'm a big advocate of, I don't really have merchandise or display anything for things I never went to, but there's a bit of a loophole because this was released for the 30 years, 30 fears range. So I got away with it a little bit. So it's definitely up there. I love the face through, I don't know. It's almost like a, is it like a satin sheet almost, like kind of cover its face. And it's kind of like the tagline in the commercial said the last scream you hear is maybe your own. So, you know, you're fighting for that last breath, maybe with the kind of sheet above you. I love how it's got like a more demonic face coming through. But that, I think this is one of the better ones in the 90s for me.
Couldn't agree more, especially with the catchphrase that they put on the brochure was the last scream you'll ever hear. Which if we're thinking now with our catchphrases that we see last year and the year before, it's 1,000% better than what we've seen in the past. What are you thinking, Gary, on the brochure?
Yeah, I like it. I love the old sort of the colors of the older maps. Recently, I've been collecting a few that I found on eBay and stuff of older park maps. But I just love that old, the old classic vibe of it. It just feels like a very 90s horror movie. Really, really good. Like Ash as well, I've got the posters up. You can't see the Scream one on this background, it's further along the wall, but I have the same posters, and it's such an awesome graphic.
Definitely can't agree with that. Now, Liz, I have a question for you on this guide. Would you have collected it if you'd went to this event? Yeah, 100%?
Oh yeah, I have all the guides from all the years I've gone. Ash and I will have a moment of silence for HHN33. We have to take a screenshot and save that. But yeah, I used to collect the maps for every year.
Definitely fantastic. And now we got the event guide, event brochure featured the screaming face, which is fantastic. And I can't wait to see what we have coming up this year, QR code form.
I think they kind of, I won't say fell off a cliff, but once we started getting into those, the 2010 years, where it's obviously very IP heavy, you know, I'll always collect them anyway. And some of the graphics are great, but I absolutely, there's no question that these early years are way better than what we get today, where it's just focusing on a particular IP.
Agreed. Well, that brings us to the scare zones and shows for HHN8. Ash is excited.
Yes, yes.
So, of course, we had to have Midway of the Bazaar return to Amity as the sole scare zone of the event, which is wild to think about. There's only one scare zone.
Yep.
And it's interesting because obviously we'll get to this in the future, but my first year of Halloween Horror Nights, Midway of the Bazaar, was in Amity. So I can kind of picture what this looked like. But yes, similar to the previous years, it helped epitomize the party atmosphere and it had become a staple for the event. And the description was, hurry, 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 step right up and try your luck, win a prize or lose your life. Enter the world's most stupendous collection of horrifying games of skill. Come one, come all, win a prize, and take it home to mummy. And of course, this is a cool feature for this year. The guests actually entered the scare zone through the mouth of the marketing icon. So that primal scream, you got to enter the scare zone through that. So Ash, are you sad you missed this one?
Yeah, I'm sad. I love how they use the marketing event guide, you know, graphic to kind of welcome guests into that area. Just the description of it, the hurry, 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 it sounds very carny, which Amity was that, you know, so it lends itself great for the area at the time. And just a great vibe. I mean, we've talked about this before plenty of times, Gary. I mean, you know, you had Julie on the show. She wanted to make sure it was a Halloween party every single year. And that sounds exactly what it is, right?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I just wish we could strip back all the fanciness from modern Horror Nights and go back to basics and sort of have that sort of party vibe. We have seen it in a couple of recent years. We had Vanity Ball, which, you know, was a very dance EDM. And we had something last year, didn't we?
Van was very party-ish.
Yes, yes, that was it, yeah. But I just wish we would like go back to that sort of party vibe and a bit more streetmosphere and stuff like that. That would be right up my street.
Yep. So, Jason, do you think, with having so many years of Midway of the Bazaar, do you think this was foreshadowing that Jack was going to be our first true icon?
100%. I can't deny that at all. I mean, like Ash and Gary were mentioning, you know, one big party, carnival atmosphere. You know, who knows? Maybe Jack the Clown was hiding around the corner and we just didn't see him coming for this event.
He probably was just hiding in Amity.
Hiding in the Amity fog. I'm sure there was fog at the event.
Yeah, maybe he was
maybe
over.
Jack's, in, yeah.
What? Maybe he was at Bill and Ted's, and that's pretty close, you know?
Yeah. It's right down the road.
Well, you're foreshadowing something for the end of this, scares zones and shows, Liz, when you're mentioning
maybe.
The. Perfect. So, yeah, one scare zone, and we have four shows. First, the was Inferno, located on the Animal Actor stage, sort of like a Cirque du Soleil show with daredevils, acrobats. It ran three times per night, and the event guide labeled it as "Enter a strange new dimension where powerful forces take control of your senses. You won't believe your eyes and ears as you're drawn into a web of irresistible music, amazing dance, and astounding aerial feats that electrify your soul." So before I pass this around, this is like four. We're gonna go over it, but four shows. Right now we're struggling with one in 2023. This just, I wish we had different locations now for shows. I know, you know, logistically it's difficult now, but this is just first of all we're gonna go over. But this sounds good, you know. Just you kind of sit down, take a moment. We've got Jason. Inferno sounds like a nice time. What are your thoughts on this?
Definitely something that we'll miss, something I believe we need. I mean, heck, they're using the Animal Actor stage for Inferno, right? And it just people eaters, something that we may have missed, you know, from last year and years past. It just sounds like a fun place to hang out and enjoy the show. Maybe a little risque, I guess you could say, for certain people, but it just sounds like a fun show to check out.
Yeah, and that's a good description when you say risque, because it just sounds like a sexy show with like dancers, music, which they've done the last 7 years prior to this. Anyway, it lends itself well. But Liz, Inferno, talk to me.
Yeah, I think it sounds a little bit like, you know, a 1998 version of the shows we have now. So I also commented on the Animal Actors. I remember seeing some magic shows in Animal Actors my first years of Halloween Horror Nights. So I wonder why they just don't use that venue anymore. If it's just too many people crowded on there waiting for food and houses, that they just don't want to use that arena to hold people. But I think it'd be great if we could figure out a way to have some more shows.
Yeah, that's a great point. Even daytime shows are suffering as well. I don't want to, you know, take anything away from Horror Nights now while we're talking about it. You know, I think Islands is desperately, you know, looking for a daytime show as well in that Toon Lagoon Amphitheater. But that's just, anyway, I'm just kind of waffling there. But Gary, just to kind of wrap this up, firstly, how are you feeling about this show Inferno? And secondly, like, to kind of piggyback what Liz is saying, do you think more shows in more locations would be a good idea to kind of disperse the crowds as well?
So I was along the same lines as Liz. This just reminds me of a 90s version of Nightmare Fuel.
Sure.
Even though I've never seen Nightmare Fuel. But it does sound cool being in the Animal Actors stage. You know, it's quite a big studio seating-wise, but the stage isn't overly huge unless they pull all of that, you know, the facade back, and there's a ton more room back there I've never seen behind it, so I'm not too sure. But I do agree we could do with it. It doesn't have to be an A-list show. It doesn't have to be, you know, Jack's Carnival of Carnage. It doesn't have to be Nightmare Fuel. It just has to be something to eat a few hundred people every 45 minutes, every hour. Even if they opened up that place and just played some music and used it as a rest area, just to let people sit and chill out and not have to stand in the streets and stuff like that. And I think that would take quite a lot of traffic away from people just hanging about. Something small. It doesn't have to be amazing. It doesn't have to be a budget eater, just something extra to draw the crowds away.
Yeah.
And I think both, you know, I was thinking of, say, Busch Gardens is kind of, you know, they're working their way toward Horror Nights with their Hallow Scream event. And that's something that they have, is they have a big music stage and they have like a little show. It's like some musicians come out, they play some songs, they're wearing like skeleton costumes. It's a short thing, maybe like 15 or 20 minutes, but it eats a crowd as they're having food and just relaxing. And I think Horror Nights could do something like that, where it doesn't have to be a huge production, just have a band in there playing some spooky songs and people would go.
Yeah, that's a great point. Just because we've seen like the little stages that they set up, like Carnage Returns, right, outside Central Park. And then when they've had to flip over the dance troupe to like Pantages, for example. But if you do that just in like Animal Actors, where it is just spooky vibes, music, people can just decompress in there. Because I know a lot of people kind of go through Diagon Alley just to kind of get away from it for a moment. You know, take a walk around Diagon, maybe even ride Escape from Gringotts, just to kind of decompress for a moment.
But now you can't do that.
No,
if you notice, correct, yeah. Diagon this year, it was just as busy as the rest of the park.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm hoping we do get the Lagoon show back this year, though.
I've got good thoughts, just because we've seen the construction for the Lagoon show that is probably coming this summer. You know, the construction's there for it. They're kind of rebuilding it all to this time withstand some damage if anything happens. So it'd just be common sense just to kind of do the Lagoon show again. So
yeah, one show is definitely not enough, and there's not enough space to be able to put another stage back in the streets like we used to have. I think we took that out for granted a lot, but just got to wait and see.
Yep.
Okay then. Moving on, we have Horrorpalooza, located on Mel's Drive-In Stage. This was a never-ending nightmare of non-stop entertainment featuring dazzling dancers, manacled musicians, and more. you'll scream as the Kiss Army Band takes center stage in a rock and roll spectacular that is guaranteed to wake the dead. So the show was basically a rock and roll concert that entertained partygoers out on the street. Liz, what do you think of this?
I think it's so funny that they're the Kiss Army Band. Like, I think this is just, I mean, 1998 would have been a little late for Kiss as it was, but I think it just shows the time period. And as we're talking about more shows, like, oh, the glory days when you could have put on a stage show at Mel's and it not create an entire bottleneck.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Jason, what's your thoughts on the Kiss Army Band? Jason there?
I would see the Kiss Army Band. Imagine how many fans of Kiss back in the mid, early, late 90s went to Horror Nights just to see that. Versus how we have this year, you have Stranger Things fans from previous years wanting just to go eventually see Stranger Things. Just imagine in the early 90s, our parents going to Horror Nights just to go see the Kiss band. Wearing black leather, ready to go, and ready to have a good time. I mean, I know Tim's not here right now. I'm sure he was there.
Oh, 100% he would have went.
I love this. Yeah, I love it. I know Liz kind of touched on it. I mean, this day and age, you know, you're fighting through crowds to get a spot or B, get through it to get to your next place. But I just love the whole party atmosphere. I don't know if I would have wanted maybe one scare zone and then four shows. I think that's a bit top heavy with the shows. You know, they could have done other bits as well around it. But yeah, why not? Rock and roll music, good vibes, spooky vibes. Just have a beer and watch. It's cool music. I don't see anything wrong with this. It's great.
Fantastic. Now, we're coming up to the next show that we'll never see at Horror Nights again, which is the Festival of the Dead Parade, which took the same parade route as prior events. Various home videos show the parade on its usual route. The parade was largely similar to prior renditions, but there was a new float decided to Chucky and Tiffany. There was also a spider float and new still walking scare actors between the floats. Coins were thrown from the floats that had the marketing icon with the screaming face on one side and the universal globe and arches on the other side. So one thing that I would say is I actually remember going to this float when I went and watching the show. And I would want to say, Ash, did you ever experience this any of your years past for Horror Nights?
Not prior to this. No. Coming up, I'll experience something. Not quite the Festival of the Dead Parade in this entirety. I love the coins or the doubloons, medallions, whatever you want to call them, that were thrown from the floats. Such a cool keepsake because it had the marketing icon on it as well. I think just they've really done a good job of incorporating that marketing icon into everything in this event. I really, really like that. But you're right, we'll never see this again. No way.
Ash, you don't have one of those, do you?
I do not have any of those, no.
This is from Age of Gen 14, so not the right year, but...
I was about to say, is it 14? Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Actually, I want to bring up a question on this float and this parade. Was this the first year that we saw Chucky and Tiffany together at a Horror Nights event?
I think so.
I believe so.
Yeah. Oh, Gary's got one too.
Coin Club.
What year is that, Gary?
This is 2001.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's my first year.
Ash is probably going to give me shade because I've collected something that I wasn't there.
I'll save, for later. Save it for later.
Oh, wow.
It's not going to focus, but hey-ho.
Hey, we know who's got the coins, who are the veteran Horror Nights troops there for you. But, yeah. No, I remember, like, I mean, I was a kid when I went to this first event, and as a kid, I was super excited to see a parade. And being one at Horror Nights, this was just kind of a nice take a break from the scares, getting scared back and forth, running around the park just to see it in person. So it was definitely a fun experience to see.
Yeah, I'd like to see this one for sure.
Yeah, I missed out on the parades. I was there when they had parades. I just never saw it. I was probably in line for a house and just never got to see it for, you know, sad times as a fan now that I missed getting to see the parade. But, you know, I do that in theme parks too. I just kind of dodge the parade in order to do the attraction. So I guess that's just on brand for me.
Just go back in time like you normally do, Liz.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Let me join Tim next time.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of going back in time.
What a segue.
Right? Look at me.
Smooth.
That brings us to, of course, our classic Halloween Horror Nights show, which is Bill and Ted's moment of silence for Bill and Ted's. So this year they returned to the Wild West stage, which is, I mean, I hope we all have, well, some of us have memories of the Wild West show that was there. Yeah. And I think that stage just lended itself perfectly to Bill and Ted's. But they returned in Bill and Ted's Excellent Halloween Adventure 7, Dial E for Excellence. And thankfully, although, Jason, did you see this show when you were there?
I did, but I don't really remember any of it.
That's fair. It was a long time ago, but thankfully there's YouTube videos. So I was able to watch it last night, and it was such a great trip down nostalgia lane. Some of this pop culture, you know, we were all too young for some of this. Others I remember very well, but let's see if we can refresh some memories out there. So the show starts with the DeLorean entering, which I always love when they did that. And TJ Hooker is on the car. Now I had to look this up, but TJ Hooker is, or was, William Shatner. So it's basically just a lot of William Shatner jokes and not anything to do with TJ Hooker. But then Mulder and Scully exit from the DeLorean, and I am a huge X-Files fan, so that made my heart happy. And they're there to investigate strange happenings at quote-unquote Happy Kingdom just down the road, because, of course, they're not going to intentionally just shoot at Disney. They're going to make it Happy Kingdom. So then the time-traveling phone booth appears, and Bill and Ted pop out. It's our hosts for this show, and I had a little hint earlier about Jack maybe appearing at Bill and Ted's, and that's because our lovely actor who plays Jack was actually playing Ted in this version of the show. So they arrive and let us know that they're going to see Saving Private Ryan on ice at Happy Kingdom. Very topical. And unfortunately, Mulder delivers the news that Happy Kingdom was recently closed by new management, who are revealed to be Jimmy and Tommy from Goodfellas. So let's pause there for a moment. How many pop culture references did you actually get in that? We'll go with Gary.
I got, obviously, the Happy Kingdom. I didn't get the TJ Hooker. I did get the Saving Private Ryan on ice, but I've never seen Goodfellas.
Me either. I will say I did get the jokes because they've become such a part of pop culture. The Goodfellas quotes, like, are you talking to me and all this like mob lingo? But it's the TJ Hooker one was right over my head. I had to Google that one. And then if you thought you were behind on the pop culture there, this next section, I really had to Google some. So Riggs and Murtaugh from Lethal Weapon arrive as backup, followed by Zorro, which leads to a gunfight, of course. Jimmy and Tommy escape in the phone booth and travel through time. Bill calls the phone booth back because he has that ability, apparently. But Jimmy and Tommy emerge with backup of their own. Wa-Sing Koo from Lethal Weapon 4, Michael Myers from Halloween, and Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez from Highlander. That's a lot of names for one person.
Can I just jot in here that Liz was really worried about reading this bit? So, like,
very off, it. Liz. Ash is going to make me say that name like 5 times. I'm like, no. But a traditional Bill and Ted fight sequence ensues with the cast of characters squaring off until each of the bad guys is disposed of one by one. So If you've seen a Bill and Ted show, you know how this goes. They introduce a whole bunch of pop culture people and then they fight. So, Jason, is that ringing any bells yet for you?
It definitely is. It's definitely ringing bells for me. Good, happy bells, happy memories.
So, as they are now victorious, Bill and Ted invite the audience to party with them and their new friends from Colorado, who are revealed to be the kids from South Park, which was massive at the time. So Cartman leads a song and dance sequence, but Jimmy returns and shoots Kenny, triggering the classic, "Oh my God, they killed Kenny," which I loved watching the video because everyone in the audience shouted it with them because this was such a big pop culture moment. So Ash, I know you are a youth at this time, but were you familiar with that South Park era?
Yes, yes. And just even now, kind of looking back on it as well, I mean, I kind of get all the references to South Park. This was just so funny because, like, when you said, Liz, like, there was like a line from TJ Hooker where the audience kind of joined in with the line. And I'm like, it's just so funny for the time because I have no idea what the line would be, which was good. I think this started out so well. It kind of got a bit, yeah, like Lethal Weapon and Goodfellas. It was like, yeah. And then it kind of picks up again at the end. And I did really like Michael Myers because obviously he's in the William Shatner mask, which kind of
Cool. True.
I was that kind of lends itself there. But yeah, this was good. And the ending, which you're going to go over, is fantastic.
So the one thing I will say is that modern Bill and Ted shows had a little bit more of a plot through the entire thing. This one, it kind of just introduces you to everyone who's going to be in the show. They fight. Most of those people disappear. And then they have this party where they're just like inviting more and more pop culture people out there. And there's really no plot happening through the end of it. But at this point, since Jimmy has killed Kenny, Bill vows to save two people in Kenny's place. And a blast of Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On begins. And of course, in enters Rose and Jack from the Titanic. So I thought this part was hilarious, but all the guys that are left out there surround Jack and ask about his experience on the Titanic, which leads to a Grease Summer Lovin' musical moment recounting his romance with Rose. So yeah, the guys are on one side. There's only a few female characters left at this point, but they're on the side with Rose, and the lyrics work so well for this. They didn't even change the lyrics. It's perfect for it. So there's another little moment with Rose where the elderly Rose enters. The young Rose asks her what she did with the necklace, and she says she threw it in the water, and young Rose punches her.
that casting for Kate Winslet, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, it was great. And the Jack, the Leonardo DiCaprio, was pretty good too.
They were both really good, yeah.
And then with no rhyme or reason, Robbie Hart from The Wedding Singer appears and sings You Spin Me Right Round, creating a full dance cast party, like full dance moment in the circle. But there's no, it's just like, hey, and here's The Wedding Singer. And again, with no transition, out walks President Bill Clinton and apologizes to the audience for the Monica Lewinsky scandal, which of course was huge at that time. And as he promises that it will never, ever happen again, You're the One That I Want from Grease begins, and Monica Lewinsky joins the cast for a final music and dance medley that is all Grease-themed. Who would have thought that Grease would have been the big thing in 1998?
Yeah, I think they went with the kind of summer loving for Jack and Rose. That, I think that worked perfectly, and they thought, let's just stick with the Grease theme, basically, I think.
I mean, it worked. It's just, I really enjoyed the show overall. I think need a little more plot like the modern day ones, but the cast was fantastic. I really enjoyed watching it back. So I highly recommend, if you haven't seen it, look for it on YouTube and just have a little blast of nostalgia.
Agreed. Yep. So that completes the show. So we're going to get into basically what we go to the event for. The houses, mazes, whatever you want to call them. So technically, there is 5 mazes this year, but it's sort of like 3 mazes, and then 2 of those mazes are split into 2 paths, basically. We're going to get to it. So, firstly, was one of the two interconnected mazes. This was SS Fritannic, Fear in First Class. This was the first maze. And this was, like I said, the first of the interconnected mazes. Both of these were located in the Earthquake Queue. Story or backstory was the house was said to be that a luxury liner. The SS Fritannic was docked in San Francisco after going to Hawaii. On this trip, the ship reportedly got sucked into a black hole and into another dimension. After arriving at San Francisco, the crew went insane and ghosts haunted the various areas of the ship. Fortunately, and I've watched the whole thing, there is documented home video of the whole 1998 event. It's well over an hour long and it sheds light on the facade and the details of this house, which is good. I did link it. I don't think you guys have watched it, but it's really cool to see. So the queue entrance has the SS Fritannic boarding sign. It's got the number 13 on it. And then it had both logos for each of the two houses. So you'd either go left or right. Fear in First Class was to the left in the queue. And this would take guests through the fancier areas of the ship. The house made it feel like the ship was moving on the ocean. It also had a few chains in elevation, which they've done a lot of the times with primarily boat houses, if you will. And after passing through the facade, guests would be in a reception area and took the left entrance. In the luggage area, guests would see another scare actor jumping out from behind a trunk. Two skeletons reenacted the King of the World scene from Titanic. Reportedly, there were floating dead bodies in the water on either side. I'll just finish up and we'll go over it. So after this, guests entered the ship, which featured a crew member jumping out from behind a board. From there, the guests entered a wooden corridor with scattered furniture and large pieces of cloth hanging down from the ceiling, perfect for hidden scares. Portholes were also on the next corridor, and you could see the ocean through the portholes. And this corridor led into one of the cabins. The next room featured a collapsed staircase and an undead barber jumping out at guests with a razor blade. Next guests would enter the bar, where a couple of scare actors can be seen shooting the corks of champagne bottles at people. From there, guests entered a casino area with paintings on the wall and a human head spinning around on the roulette table. In this room was a billiards table with a scare actor playing a dead card dealer. And there was also a dead waitress holding a head on the plate. Next, guests would enter a room filled with elevators with scare actors and had one leg trapped in it. Next up was a treasure room with an area with barred windows with scare actors hiding behind them. And the finale was exiting through a room with corpses hanging from the ceiling. So that was a lot. When you get to these years now where we start getting home videos and accounts, they are going to be longer in terms of what we know went on in the maze. But just to kind of lend it round here, it sounds like sensory overload here, Gary. Talk to me about this maze and the fact that it was kind of a dual entrance maze as well.
This just, to me, sounds fantastic, and it's something that I would love to have been able to go through. I sort of love anything sort of ship-themed, boat-themed, horror movies based around ships and stuff like that. I think it's just such a creepy setting. It sounds like it was really, really good, and very well thought out, and the dual path thing is something they tried to bring back last year with Duel and Dragons, but yep. I thought that felt a little bit of an end thought type thing. It wasn't really a dual path, it was just two endings that you could choose to see how the story pans out. With this being two sort of houses in one, with you can choose where you want to go through the whole house, I think that is a great use of space. Because you're basically getting two experiences in the same location.
Yeah, agreed. Liz?
Yeah, I got to see a little piece of the Fritannic during the, I guess that was 2010's Hollowed Past.
Yep.
And that was fun because I knew the history by that point and I was excited to get to see a little piece of it. But if any house deserves to have a reboot, kind of like they did with Ghost Town, I feel like it's Fritannic. I think it's time to redo this one, bring it to the modern Halloween Horror Nights fans and let all of us experience, because it's been a long time.
Agreed. Yeah, I think we can talk about some original mazes that we probably want to make a comeback. Just for you, Liz, because I know you very interested in this. It was revealed that the SS Fritannic crew are part of the Karazhan Legion just because they're undead. So there you go. Little tidbit for
okay.
you.
Okay.
Yeah. And Jason, yeah, talk to me about this maze.
I want to go back in the way back machine right now and live it in person. This Definitely. This just sounds like if it was in a soundstage, you know, walking through like this year and just seeing the facade set, just something I want to see in person. Just felt like the scares would probably be up in your face, ready to go. This gets me all excited about Horror Nights again. And I agree with Liz 100%. It needs to come back in the future for us.
Agreed. Yeah, this was a good one. Just the events of it, really cool. And Gary's actually going to take us through the second kind of portion of it.
Yeah, so the SS Fritanic Carnage Crew was the second of the two interconnected mazes. This house would take guests through the poorer areas of the ship. Guests walk through the crew quarters, that's hard to say, with one man lying dead on a bed impaled by a sword. Tragic way to die. Human bones and other remains were scattered all over the bunk beds in the room, and there were many undead cabin crew members as well. A zombie scare actor was manning the wheel of the ship, and scares came from behind the linen that dangled from the roof. Another room was the sick bay of the ship, which I think would be very, very cool to see. And it had the dentist office with the smell of burning teeth. That just sounds awful. As the dead dentist hacked at victims' mouths. Now, that sounds awful to me because I've got like a huge fear of the dentist anyway. Yep. There was a huge meat, there's always a meat locker room. There was a huge meat locker room filled with hanging corpses and an engine room. One report says that the rat lady may have appeared in the house, although this unconfirmed. So if anyone can reach out and let us know, we'd love to know if you can confirm it or not. And the finale exited through a room with corpses hanging from the ceiling, the same as the other house. As the line reconvened here, and the rat lady was supposed to have appeared in the house here, but we cannot be confirmed.
Cool. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of this, for the, I guess, poorer areas, for me, I think this would be, in my mind, the scary of the two, the dentist one as well. But it did seem we had more to go off for the other one. I think the other one would be a scary in my mind than this one. I don't know what everyone else is thinking.
Yeah, I think this one sounds a little less specific to the Titanic because it's going to be the more crew quarters. So it's going to have that ship feel, but not be like Fritanic. And I would prefer to see the other maze come back or just combine them and have some of both. That would be great.
Yeah, just would you prefer? Yeah, you have one choice. Which are you choosing out of these two?
Probably still the first one, but you said dentist. I don't know. Dentists are absolutely terrifying. We get a Dr. Giggles house, and then it's game over.
Yeah, actually the noise, just the noise of the kind of drill, and then, you know, you kind of have that burning, the kind of burning smell, like you're going to fill in.
No.
And it's, no.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But yeah, also a nice little tidbit as well, the kind of undead crew member who was manning the kind of wheel of the ship was Michael Aiello back in the day too, so it's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Well, we'll move on to the next house here, and that is Hell's High. And I'll read off the description here. Was our third maze and was located in the Nazerman's area, a little place of home for all of us that we should come back soon. A slasher movie was being filmed at a school, but the movie's villain, other actors, were possessed by several murderers that started killing anyone who wandered onto the set. Sounds familiar too. The villain's name was Michael Krueger. Michael Krueger, a hybrid of two popular slasher icons, a banner that said, "Universal Pictures presents Hell's High, now showing," hung above the facade. There was also a poster for the movie on the wall showing Krueger holding a noose and machete. Hell's High is written on the poster in front of a fiery background. The tagline of the movie, "School's Out Forever," is also on the poster. On the door to enter the house was a sign that read, "Hot Set Production in Progress." The line wasn't a conga line, and guests were staggered into the maze. Now, that's something that I would love to see now, but unfortunately, probably won't see that anytime soon. Once again, a home video captured many scenes from the haunted house announcement, and school bells could be heard throughout the house. Margaret Spoo, a crazed cafeteria lady crawling around, several grueled in a cafeteria, and there was a bloody body parts and organs on the tables. Bugs crawling around and a skeleton in a chair. She was covered in rotten-smelling mystery meat. Disgusting. Yeah. There was also a gym room with a hanged body and a bag filled with body parts. One picture also suggests that there were scare actors hidden in lockers, and sliding windows and screams could be heard from the gym bags. An evil nurse with a syringe and room featuring an evil gym coach also appeared. Apparently, there was also a science classroom that smelled of formaldehyde and skulls and jars set on the tables. There was also a dissected student on one of the lab tables. The principal's office was next, and Krueger had him tied up and was hacking at him with a hatchet. And the secretary had scissors through her eyes and something in her throat. Wonder what that could be. A chain link fence and scare actors behind and the boiler room scene. Scares were also in the house. At the exit, a car would beep its horn to scare guests and are met with two more Michael Krueger scare actors before they exited. Now, I want this to come back right now because this just sounds fantastic. It screams 90s. The vibes with schools out forever. It just felt like a good time. But the fact that they're not doing a conga line for a house is huge. And I can't wait to see something like that. What are your thoughts on this, Liz?
If only that were a thing that could happen at modern Halloween Horror Nights, right? We all wish. Yep. Like, it's been a long time since I've been pulsed through a house at Halloween Horror Nights. But yeah, I think they haven't really repeated this kind of theme. I don't think that they will. But it probably would be my, of the houses that are there, probably not the one I would go to first. And I'm sure it was very gory, which is not usually my thing. I like the scenic, beautiful houses rather than the blood and guts. But I'm sure it was terrifying.
Fair, definitely fair. What do you think, Ash?
Yeah, I like this one. I like the kind of hot set aspect of it, where you're kind of walking onto, you're not sure whether it's part of the movie or not. I do like being set up in a high school. I think that'd be a cool setting for a modern Horror Nights. Reminds me of like a B-movie type vibe as well. So, yeah, I like this one.
Very cool. And Gary, leave us with something spectacular.
They went really hard this year with the meat smells. Not sure I'd be a fan of that. But like everybody said, the setting does sound really cool. I can't see them, you know, with the way things are now, I can't see them doing a school setting. But like Ash says, a B-movie type, you know, 80s and early 90s slasher horror would be really cool. So yeah, I would have liked to go through this one.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea to modernize this concept of make it into an 80s slasher movie set where you don't know if that person is actually getting killed or if they're just an actor in a scene. I think that would be a cool way to bring this back to a modern mm-hmm. take.
Yeah, and this location is usually like the guts and gore one as well. So the Nazeman's one, they've kept the kind of guts and gore one, which I kind of like too.
Yeah. Well, then that brings us to our third house, which also had a two-parter, apparently. So this was Universal's Museum of Horror, Chamber of Horrors, which was in Soundstage 22. Outside the entrance of the house was a stone gargoyle, and the entrance included a Museum of Horror logo. It started in an old museum with spiderwebs hanging down from a sign that said, "Die Here." There was a hallway with lit candelabras, and its walls were lined with movie posters. At this point, the line split into two mazes, so I'm going to talk about one of them, and then Gary's going to talk about the other. So this first one was a museum of horror displaying the Universal classic monsters, as well as some other familiar scenes from horror films. Concept art showed a graveyard scene and an electric chair scene, possibly for Frankenstein. Another scene featured a dusty spiderweb-covered organ with a lady with long black hair, possibly another nod to the Rat Lady. But the majority of the classic monsters were said to appear in the house, with nods to Night of the Living Dead and an appearance from Norman Bates from Psycho. And there's a fun fact that the organ that was used in this maze was the same organ used in Universal's Casper in 1995, which I love that movie. So I'm kind of sad I didn't get to see it. But Ash, what do you think of this first half of Museum of Horror?
Love it. I always say, well, even if it's not a maze, the Universal Classic Monster should appear in some form in the event. Even roaming scare actors will be nice. Just anything Universal Monsters, I'm all for. So yeah, sign me up. And two parts again. Cool. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Just bring back the Classic Monsters constantly. It's one of the best IPs that they have internally, and I will never get tired of them.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you, Jason?
I remember this fluidly because this is the house that I think I went into a few times because
it nice.
Screamed, Classic Monsters, and I kind of knew who they were, per se. I wasn't too terrified to walk through this house. So this is a memory road for me, and I absolutely had a blast with it.
Nice. Do you remember anything that I didn't read? Do you remember anything extra?
I do remember the Casper piano that you were discussing. I do remember quite a bit once Gary starts talking, per se. I have a moment that kind of made me very pale. Than I already am.
All right. Well, Gary, are you sad you missed this one?
I am. I love anything Universal Monsters, and to go into a house where you've got Universal Monsters and then nods of Night of the Living Dead and Norman Bates popping out, sign me up.
Well, that brings you to your half of the house.
Yeah, the second Monster Maze in Soundstage 22 was Universal's Museum of Horror Unnatural History. At the beginning, Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees could be seen standing next to a wall, and that The Fly was also represented in there as well, another cool film. The Nightmare on Elm Street theme could also be heard and reportedly was a Freddy scare actor, so if anyone can again let us know. Further into the house, Regan from The Exorcist could be seen sitting on her bed with her head spinning as the iconic music played, and scares also came from The Priest. Poltergeist, also featured in the next room, as Carol Ann could be heard in the background. The Omen was also represented with a child carrying a knife and hanging corpse. Next, a werewolf from American Werewolf in London, and Jack Torrance from The Shining laughing, holding a weapon. Guests could also hear Danny screaming Red Room, and guests would then enter a huge hedge maze. Towards the end, chainsaw noises could be heard, and scares from Leatherface, Ghostface, Michael Myers again chase guests out onto the street. This just sounds absolutely manic. Liz, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a lot of various horror characters all together in one house. So I think it would have been a great treat if you're a horror fan to be able to go through this in the olden days of Horror Nights where they just snuck in characters and didn't get the licensing rights to them. I think it would have been really cool to see all these characters together in one house.
Yeah. Jason, what about you?
This is the house that Jason got into my face and made me jump 30 feet up into the air as a little kid. I went with my father to Horror. It's kind of a tradition for us, but let's just say I jumped onto the back of his head when I got startled. So this was huge. Just having, the modern day classic monsters, I guess you could say, come through. It's just a fun experience for all to be had.
Awesome. So, Ash, do you want to take us into your wrap-up and little tidbits that you found for this year's event?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me go into a little piece of just miscellaneous stuff that don't really fit into the kind of event wrap-up itself. But very importantly, October 31st, 1998, the New York Times, Edwin McDowell wrote, "Strange things are going on at Universal Studios Florida. Roving bands of chainsaw brandishing hoodlums pursue fleeing customers through darkened streets. Zombies and demons lunge from every nook and cranny. Shrieks and foul odors emerge from haunted houses." Basically, in the words of one Universal employee, the theme park wants to try and make you scream until there's no sound left. Now, this is a big piece from New York Times. It just shows that they really are flexing the muscles now. They found their feet with this event, like, tenfold. It does continue into an in-depth review, and it does allude to a turnover margin this year, the biggest they've had for this event, $11 million. So in such a short space of time, the events come such a long way from one haunted house and on one weekend in 1991 to now in having five mazes, four shows, scare zone. Now we're turning over 11 million. I know we're spending more much on the event now, but just to show they're turning that over in the late 90s is just staggering. Just to kind of keep it moving. There was a press release dated October 6th. And this is an Orlando PRN Newswire. This Halloween, it's back to school for those who dare at Universal Studios Florida during the 8th annual Halloween Horror Night Celebration, which runs this year for a record-breaking 19 nights. And we laugh at that these days, beginning October 2nd. During the day, guests can enjoy more than 40 rides, attractions, and shows, but once nighttime falls, the park is transformed into the most vivid of nightmares. With fear in their hearts, guests will make their way through a total of 5 haunted mazes, terrifying stage shows, and most disturbing festival of the dead parade ever. Also, this year, I don't know if they did this prior, but you could get married at the Halloween Horror Nights event. I'm not talking about just proposing there. You could set it up where a minister, it looked like the Beetlejuice's Graveyard Review area. Chucky and Tiffany will join you on the stage. You can officially get married at Halloween Horror Nights now, with a proper minister there. It does show there's a YouTube video explaining that as well. Rest in peace. The Universal Classic Monsters Cafe did open this year, and the description was grab a bite, where all the biggest stars hang out, classic horror stars that is. Amid classic sci-fi and horror movie memorabilia, you'll enjoy monster salads, frightfully good pizza, pasta and rotisserie chicken, devilishly rich desserts and more. Trust us, the food is to die for. Stop by the patio bar and try our classic Monsters Margarita or our killer Primal Squeeze. It's closed on October 2nd, 10th, and 23rd, so probably the off-peak days. But Primal Squeeze, come on, just the even back then they're doing a themed drink, which is really, really cool. Finally, one big piece of information, very significant, a spokesperson from Knott's Berry Farm's Halloween event. Not Scary Farm. They were asked about Universal Orlando's big foray now into the Halloween kind of domain. They give their opinion saying that Not Scary Farm had essentially ran Halloween in the theme park world since 1973. The spokesperson say, yep, we're aware that Universal Orlando's Halloween Horror Nights event, but they doubt it would ever upstage Not Scary Farm, and also say to we are the king of Halloween. Now, the mantle of the King of Halloween was being challenged by Universal, and we all know it is now the premier Halloween event. So I don't know if that person is still working for Knott's anymore. So
I told you so. There you go.
Yes. So that's the event wrapped up. It just take a lot to kind of go into what entails on the in the background for this, but we do want to wrap it up. We know these events now start getting more and more information, so it kind of runs a little bit longer. Before I kind of go over where to find, does anybody want to talk about anything? Anything we need to discuss? Liz?
Yeah, I just thought as you were reading that it's interesting that it was 19 nights, the event, and I went to this year's event 19 nights.
Wow.
Or 2023's wow. event. Yeah, so I would have gone every night of that event.
That's hilarious. Yeah, because it's sort of funny because like we're seven, well, including 91, we have 8 events now. So the fact that 19 nights is a record, it's just funny. We're probably going to get a record again this year. So yeah, very, very cool. But yeah, cool to be back recording, getting into the swing of our history episodes again. Speculation season is going to be coming soon as well, so we're going to be probably busy. So we try and fit these episodes in when there's sort of like an off season, so it doesn't kind of, you know, go into our other things. But other than that, you can find us at RIP Tour Podcast. That's going to be on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We're trying to get these episodes now onto YouTube as well. Live streams possibly, but yeah, again, anybody else anything to add before we wrap up?
Nope.
Cool. Alrighty, so from all of us, bye.
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 Bye.